Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, June 24th, 2018, Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and I am proud to be joined at this time by former Gonzo and the Greg producer, Kurt Hoffman. Kurt, it's good to talk to you once again.
Greg, I can hear you just fine. Been a long time. Thanks, as always, for bringing me on the show. How was your weekend out in Florida?
It was actually pretty stormy out today. I'm hoping that we stay on the air for the entire time we have allotted here on Wrestling Night America. And if I get kicked off or anything like that, that means the storms have returned. Some pretty funky electrical storms today here in Southwest Florida. I hope you're holding down the fort up there in Western New York, Kurt.
A little rainy, not quite stormy, you know. But hey, you know, if the power goes out, we'll just, you know, have another one in 2 days. Beware of Dog Park 2. No problems.
Okay, I like the sound of that. For those longtime PW Torch listeners of my shows, Gonzo and the Greg, we did that, almost 10 years ago now, probably 8 years ago we started that, and you can find the archives. VIP members of PWTorch.com have access to all of our Gonzo and the Greg shows on PWTorch.com. Have you talked to Gonzo lately, Kurt?
Geez, it's been a while. I think the last time I chatted with him was one text accident, what he was doing for the fourth. And, yeah, he brushed me off pretty quickly. So, yeah, his conversations with that man come far, far in between.
Okay. Well, I think you have me beat, because I think the last time I talked to him was at his wedding, actually, when I was in it. So,
strong connection, strong bond.
Well, you know, he owes me $100. I don't know if I've told you this story.
Oh, no.
It's a big surprise. Gonzo owes me money, right? You were in the wedding with me. We were both groomsmen for Gonzo. His groomsman gift to us was he was paying the $100 for the tux rental. I mean, if I'm wrong, but that was our
gift, right?
Oh,
you're right. And I was
okay.
Like, wow, what a guy.
So, anyway, I picked up my tux before he got to the rental shop to pay for each of our tuxes. So I had to pay for my own, anticipating, of course, that I would get paid back. Well, if you know Gonzo, that never happened. So he owes me $100 right now. So next time you see him, which could be in 5 years, I'm sure you'll see him or talk to him before I do. Just remind him that he owes me $100.
I can't wait to ask him about that. His response would be, Greg, what a schmo.
Who cares? He's in Florida. I'm never going to see him again.
Oh,
so, you know, the reason I love having you back on this show, Kurt, is there's a demand for Gonzo and the Greg, because every once in a while I'll get a caller on Wrestling Night in America who will say, you know, love Gonzo and the Greg, you know, wish you guys were still doing shows. Every once in a while, I'll get a tweet from people. It's been 8 years, like I said, since we started Gonzo and the Greg, and I kind of feel like it would have been long forgotten by now. But every once in a while, I still do get those messages, which warms the cockles of my heart for sure, because I know, Kurt, when we started doing that show, it was almost just for us. You know, it was like we're having these conversations. We're watching all kinds of wrestling. We might as well document it, you know, just for the five or six people we anticipated who would listen to it. And it kind of blew up in a way that I don't think we expected.
I never had so much more fun than what we did I mean, it's from the very moment we started talking about such a concept. I remember the day I was doing laundry in that separate building in our apartment complex. You come walking in, you're like, Kurt, we need to do a podcast together. And I said, when and what living room, pal? we got that PlayStation 3 set up with that iToy microphone. That's right, folks. Your favorite podcast was recorded off a cheap toy.
And that was the best, though. That was the best sound quality. I would put that up against any podcast quality as far as voice and recording today. I mean, that was clear as a bell.
I know. I can't believe that worked as well as it should have. I mean, it was, as I said, it was a video game system, and we were making these very, very fun weekly podcasts that people were loving. And by the way, you know, for you to listen right now, thank you so much for enjoying Guys on the Greg. It does make me feel warm inside as well to know that the simple stuff that we did for, you know, almost 2 hours out of the week was something that people enjoyed at their home or work. Or drive to work, and that makes me feel great. Thank you. And I don't think we really have that much of an excuse to not try to do it again, because you got people like Edging Christian, their podcast, you got like one guy in Ireland and the other guy in Florida, and they have like crystal clear quality of a podcast.
Yeah.
It's tough to come up with excuses why we're not doing it again.
Well, I think the main excuse is the two-thirds of us don't watch as much wrestling as we did back then. It would be
okay,
tough to...
You know what? You got me there. It's kind of a... Yeah, especially Gonzo. I highly doubt
until,
he's watching
and until
it.
Gonzo pays me, until Gonzo pays me back that $100, I'm not doing any podcasts with him. That's my
goal. Oh, there's the line in the sand.
Anyways, Kurt, since we have you for a limited amount of time tonight, I want to get right into it. New Japan is one of the promotions that you still pay close attention to. And they just had, you know, there's still a hangover, I think, from Dominion because of the quality of the show and the quality of some of the matches. They have their G1 in America special coming up on July 7th, San Francisco on Access TV. Then they've got the G1, of course, over the summer, which is their big tournament of the year. So, first of all, Kurt, I want to ask you about a few things from Dominion. One of them being Chris Jericho, and yet another reinvention of character by Jericho. Certainly nothing that we've seen before from him in this match, this last show against Naito. What's your take on Jericho reinventing himself for the New Japan audience and then sort of kind of going back whenever he shows back up in WWE? He was there for the Greatest Royal Rumble in Saudi Arabia, back doing his, you know, shtick of the list character. It's amazing that he can kind of go back and forth, and that New Japan character that he's cultivated is totally separate from what we see in WWE.
Yeah, dramatically different. Like, those press conferences that Jericho has in New Japan, like, they scare me. Like, I think I understand enough of the inner workings of the company to not really feel that much about Jericho, but man, wow, he's really convincing sometimes. And what he did at Dominion was very interesting with this whole, I don't know, what do you want to call this, kind of like a drunken clown gimmick. I don't know. He's like really aggressive with his black eyeshadow stuff all over him, black lipstick. And I guess that his way is like maybe trying to play head games with L.I.J. because he's got his own t-shirt at Hot Topic that's his own L.I.J. except ending in Jericho. So maybe it's supposed to be like his take on it. I don't know. It's very, very odd, but still... He was still very aggressive in the ring and still came across as quite a force by winning that belt.
And another thing that I wanted to ask you about with New Japan getting a new president who has visions of expanding the New Japan Empire, and you look at who went over at Dominion and who won titles at Dominion, and they're all... You know, so many of them North American, and I wonder if that was something that you noticed watching the show, that this felt like New Japan. And maybe it was just as simply as they were preparing for the show in San Francisco. It's very unlike NJPW to do this kind of short-sighted booking and to change titles for one show in San Francisco. So this felt to me more like this is kind of an adjustment of New Japan's booking to be more friendly to those English speakers and those in North America as New Japan tries to make inroads into this country.
Yeah, it feels like he's trying to make everybody meet in the middle, Japanese promotion, but with North American champions. And again, it can't be just a coincidence that the new president shows up and all of a sudden we got belts changing. It would seem like he's trying to get both countries to just shake hands and meet in the middle. By the way, have you seen his interview in the ring at Dominion, this new president? Did you see that?
That happened in the pre-show or right before the show went on the air. I watched the show live. I watched the show live, Kurt, at 3 a.m. So woke up at like 2:55. So there was no time for fluff for me. So I did not see that interview.
That's one of the things you do for your love of the business.
Dedication.
Wow. You got that right. But you should try to, I don't know if you got the New Japan World app or just try to find it on YouTube. You should see this guy. He takes a couple steps, like they announce him, right? And he's far off, like against the wall in the arena or in the entryway. And he takes a couple steps walking to the ring. And then he tries to break out in this full sprint down to the ring. Oh, brother, here's a guy that should not run, let alone run his way down to the ring. It is embarrassing. He's trying to run down to the ring. I'm like, nah, man, you're not one of the boys. All right? Stop it.
Just try to show some enthusiasm, right?
He's trying to be, you know, this crazy guy, like, you know, I'm not just some stiff in a suit, man. I'm one of the boys. And he just goes busting out in this run down to the ring, like, ooh, no more, don't.
we'll see how much of the boy, one of the boys he wants to be if he becomes an on-air authority figure.
Yes, but in order to make his way up to that, he's got to be one of the young lions for Suzuki to beat the crap out of.
At ringside, coming out with a cold compress for one of the guys after the match.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, somehow I doubt we'll see that, but you never know. We're going to be back after this break with more from Kurt Hoffman, where we talk about the Okada Omega match, his impressions of that, as well as the Cow Palace lineup slated for July 7th. And we'll talk NXT TakeOver and some thoughts on Vader, who passed away this past week. Our thoughts, our memories of him. Don't you go anywhere. This is Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. It's my philosophy, too. See, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
Sala Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
You know, shaving with Harry's never gets old. They know exactly when I'm due for new razors, get them in the mail, and they can do the same for you. Harry stands behind the quality of their blades, but they know that switching razors isn't an easy decision. So they created a trial offer. Claim yours by going to harrys.com/PWTorch. By selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand, just $2 per blade compared to $4 or more. You can get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, including a weighted ergonomic handle, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Listeners of Wrestling Night in America can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/PWTorch. Make sure you go to harrys.com/PWTorch to redeem your offer and let them know I sent you to help support the show. Back with more Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com. Former Godzone and the Greg producer Kurt Hoffman is my guest here tonight. And, Kurt, I want to talk about Okada versus Omega. A 2 out of 3 falls match, which was lauded by many as the best match they'd ever seen, was lauded by many as the best match in pro wrestling history. Kurt, I know you've watched a lot of wrestling. I've watched a lot of wrestling with you, so I know just how much wrestling you've watched. Where on the scale for you personally in matches that you've seen does this Okada-Omega match rank?
Oh, boy. It's be too easy to say that it could be the greatest match I've ever seen. Because, man, as you said, I've seen a lot of matches. But, man, when it comes to what I've seen lately, how could I not say that that's the greatest thing I've seen in such a long time? I mean, that was cinematic. it was just outstanding that they were able to piece together such a long match, but not make it seem that long. It was incredible. And I also love the camera work, too, where they have a lot of these camera shots where they're down at the base of the ring and they're filming kind of upwards at the guys with the crazy nice lighting around them in that arena. Like, that was just unforgettable is what that was.
You know, it sort of reminds me of the Flair Steamboat series of matches that, you know, we sat down. I know when that first Ric Flair DVD came out and it had the Steamboat matches on there, we were kind of enthralled by that. Omega versus Okada kind of reminds me of that in their series of matches, only, you know, different time, different place, different, maybe they're trying to do something different, but Omega versus Okada, you know, I think half step or a step above even those Flair Steamboat classics that we watched.
Oh, they did a lot more different stuff than Flair Steamboat. I can tell you that it evolved would be a great word to say. It's a much more evolved climate than it was X amount of decades ago. You can still cherish, you know, the foundations and the roots that brought it to such a level that we have today, that you can't deny that it's just the level of talent nowadays in wrestling. It's astounding.
Talking about the G1 special, which will take place, as I said, July 7th at the Cow Palace in San Francisco. The lineup has been posted. It's going to air live on Access TV. The lineup is Sho, Yo, Rocky Romero, Gato, and Yoshihashi against Chase Owens, Yujiro Takahashi, Tonga Loa, Tama Tonga, and King Haku. We also have Yano and Ishii versus Zack Sabre Jr., Minoru Suzuki, Kushida and Tanahashi against Marty Scurll and Hangman Page, Goto versus Jeff Cobb in a never openweight title match. The Young Bucks take on Sonata and Evil for the IWGP tag titles. Will Ospreay and Okada versus Bushi and Naito. Hiromu Takahashi versus Dragon Lee for the junior heavyweight title. Jay White against Juice Robinson for the U.S. title. And Omega versus Cody for the IWGP title and the Bullet Club Explodes match. Looking at that lineup, Kurt, knowing that the ticket sales maybe at the Cow Palace have not been flying as swiftly as the ones for the show at Long Beach last year, knowing that New Japan is trying to make significant inroads in North America, does this lineup, is this New Japan putting their best foot forward for an event in an emerging market like the United States, or do you think they may have left something on the table with this lineup?
Jeez, like what? What else are they? I mean, that's a pretty nice card.
Well, I'm looking at Okada in a tag match. I'm looking at Tanahashi in a tag match. And those are two of the bigger name guys. I'm looking at Jay White, Juice Robinson in a U.S. title match, which there's been some pushback to the Jay White character. Juice Robinson's done extremely well in New Japan since he moved over there from NXT, but he's still at a certain level. So, you know, there are guys who I think could be utilized better on this card instead of being stuck in tag matches. Certainly Omega versus Cody is intriguing on a number of levels, most notably the Bullet Club storyline.
Right, and they probably think that, well, we're going to North America, so let's have a North American story arc to be the one in the headlines, but they might be wrong in that sense, to where people just love the New Japan talent over in Japan. You know what I think they should have done? Maybe they should have had the inaugural G1 Climax card start in North America at that one place, mm-hmm. and then head over to Japan. Maybe that's what they should have done.
My thing about this is, and you sort of touched on it there, is there's got to be a fine line that New Japan walks, because yes, North America, you know, you want English speaking wrestlers prominently displayed so they can do media, they can push the product in America to those who may not be familiar with it, to be able to draw a new audience, especially if they are going to get into the business of running North America multiple times per year and not just once or twice a year. However, you don't want to alienate the New Japan fans that you already have in North America by trying to give them something that's not New Japan, by trying to give them, you know, by trying to lessen the impact of the Japanese stars like the Tanahashis, like the Okadas, that the hardcore New Japan fans in America identify with New Japan. So that's going to be an interesting part of this expansion by New Japan to watch, of how do they balance that push of North American, recognizable North American wrestlers versus the Japanese wrestlers that have made New Japan and who the already New Japan fans identify with that product.
That's tough. that is tough. I don't know if I would go with, like, international co-main events, you know, maybe have a match like Omega and Cody, but then have, I don't know, maybe Okada versus Naito as an undercard or a main event that goes after that match. I don't know. It's a very unique situation that they have. It's a very unenviable task to be able to unite two different cultures under one roof. And I don't know. I hope they find a way.
Yeah, it's, you know, they're the number two promotion in the world probably right now. You know, we're not going to make a dent in with WWE, but it'll be interesting. The last New Japan note I want to go over with you, Kurt, before we move on to NXT TakeOver, is the G1 Climax takes place or begins July 14th. The look at the blocks as they stand, it was already announced. Block A is Michael Elgin, Evil, Bad Luck Fale, Makabe, Okada, Hangman Page, Minoru Suzuki, Tanahashi, Jay White, and Yoshihashi. B block has Goto, Kota Ibushi, Ishii, Naito, Omega, Juice Robinson, Zack Sabre Jr., Sanada, Tamatanga, and Toru Yano. Kurt, can you give me a prediction on who you like maybe as the guys who come out of each block, or maybe just the overall winner? Who do you like winning the G1 this year?
Man, this is tough. Oh, man. I, by the way, I love the block layouts. I never quite understood what the G1 was. I mean, I'll be honest, I never paid attention that deeply up until now. But now I got a grasp of what this tournament is. I get it. I get how awesome this is. I mean, every card is practically like a WrestleMania because they're giving you matchups that you really don't see.
It's an all-star card almost.
Absolutely. So I'm excited. And not to mention the final match, the climax of the climax. It's not my birthday, so happy birthday to me. This is gonna be great.
Wow, nice. You gonna get up at 5 a.m. to watch it live?
Nope. Nope. That's a big bucket of nope there, buddy.
Yeah.
I thought, maybe everybody else thought this too, that it'd probably be Ibushi against Omega at Wrestle Kingdom. But I don't know. I don't know. It could be what they've done with Zack Sabre Jr. Like, they built a star out of a tournament, like they did with him in the Best of the Super Juniors. So it could literally be anybody, I guess. Like, they could build a star out of that tournament. To predict who would come out of the A and the B block, I'm thinking maybe Okada out of the A block to make it seem like he might be coming back for his title.
Rising from the ashes a little bit.
Yeah. And B block, what happens if Omega wins, by the way? Like, the winner pretty much gets the world title shot at Wrestle Kingdom, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah,
so
traditionally.
Does Omega try to one-up himself and have a match against himself at Wrestle Kingdom and somehow still gets, five stars?
if you look at some of the wrestling that he's done in the past, and some that he's been criticized for, namely by Jim Cornette, it basically has been him wrestling himself in those matches, so it would not be unprecedented to see something like that. But, yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I don't think it happens just because this is an opportunity to really put someone else over to the level of being a major contender. And I compare this kind of to Money in the Bank, where Money in the Bank is your opportunity to take a guy who may not normally get a world title opportunity and afford him a sort of a shortcut to that opportunity. And I sort of look at the G1 Climax is that too. Now, that doesn't mean I'm expecting, Yano or somebody like that to win, but you can really make a star in the 1 month that this tournament runs and make them, Kingdom is sort of their WrestleMania. You can make a huge star by virtue of having them endure and win the G1. And I think that's a really cool thing to be able to do.
Yeah, okay, so a prediction then on my end, just to get one locked in, I'm actually going to say Naito. And I think Naito is going to get his belt at Wrestle Kingdom. I think that might have something to do with Jericho getting the IC belt from Naito, because maybe they got him on a path to get the world title.
Okay, interesting. So we've got you down now. We've locked you into a prediction. How does that make you feel?
Same as it always does.
All right. We're going to move on to NXT TakeOver and touch on that real quick before we go to break, and then we'll talk more TakeOver after that. Since the last time we talked, there's been a lot of new faces who've emerged in NXT, and I kind of want to get your thoughts on a few of them. First of all, Velveteen Dream.
Future star. Man, I think I've mentioned it the last time I was on this podcast, but I never had a guy turn me around so much like he has. Like, well, when he first arrived, it felt like he was really desperately trying to find an identity. And those red, white, and blue Buff Bagwell early 90s-esque tights were not doing it for him. They really were not. But then all of a sudden he shows up in this Prince-esque character. I was even hating on that at the beginning, too. I'm like, oh, God, come on. This is your second attempt. This is ridiculous. But then something different happened. He really owned the character. It's like he really finally fit into it. And now he's probably, the top guy in the industry, or in NXT, rather. At least going by crowd response. Everybody loves him.
Yeah, and if you read the house show reports, he's often one of the most over guys on the roster at the house shows too, which is really cool to see. You mentioned major improvement from Patrick Clark, the Velveteen Dream. And I think the great thing is his ceiling is so much higher. Like, he's really good in the ring, but he can still be even better.
Scary. Yeah. He has a ton of athletic ability in him, and he's barely scratched the surface in racking in the years in the company. So you're right, the ceiling is high, and he's probably going to be like a world heavyweight champion on the main roster.
Wow. Okay. Another prediction from Kurt Hoffman. Lots of predictions here that we're gonna mark the tape, as we used to say, and come back to this in a few years and see how accurate we were. How about that?
Yeah, just make sure you have Gonzo on there too, because I'd love to have him do his usual Gonzoisms on my predictions. Well, there's another Buzz Hoffman. Way to go.
I'm telling you, $100 or no Gonzo on the podcast. That's what I'm telling you right now. Well, we're going to take a break and come back with more of Kurt's thoughts on TakeOver here after this on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back with more Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com. I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, joined by former Gonzo and the Greg producer Kurt Hoffman, and we are talking NXT TakeOver, which we didn't get to spend a lot of time on last week on Wrestling Night in America because it was the post-Money in the Bank wrap-up show where we spent 95% of our time on that. My next guy that I want you to give me your thoughts on, Kurt, is Lars Sullivan.
I love that man. He is a throwback to those Leviathan, just straight-up monsters, but he has this serial killer modern edge to it that I just love that so much. He cuts convincing promos. It scares me so much. Like, all they need to do is just have that camera looking up at him from the ground, and he gets all wide-eyed talking about how he's going to mangle people in the ring, and I'm like, oh, God. Yep, I believe him. He's like the really, really, really good version of Nathan Jones.
How dare you, sir? Nathan Jones was the really good version of Nathan Jones. Do I have to make you sit down and watch that Shannon Moore squash again?
That's true. What we need now is a Taz to sit at the commentary table, the Q&A. Oh, God, it's Lars Sullivan.
that was peak Nathan Jones, that match right there. I look forward to the eventual reveal that Lars Sullivan is the long lost son of former WCW star Dave Sullivan.
I love it.
that will completely ruin him. Finally, I want to ask you about Shayna Baszler.
Yes, breakout star. Absolutely. I don't know if you saw NXT last week where she had an interview with the remaining two of the horse women that recently got signed standing by. She better be the mouthpiece of those two because those two look lost. she really needs to lead the charge on this one. And I can't wait for when she goes to the main roster and interacts with Rousey in whichever way they plan on doing it, whether either they have them tagged together or an incredible WrestleMania matchup, I would say. Other than that, she not the absolute greatest in the mic, but I think she carries herself just enough to still be formidable as a star.
Yeah, absolutely. She's kind of like a dream in the ring, I think she is on the mic, where she's already really good for her experience level, but you can see that there's still room for a lot of improvement that she could get to take her to the next level.
Yeah, she's already starting to find herself, and she's very vicious. That arm break foot stomp thing, the first time I saw her do that to Dakota Kai, that was ruthless, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. Sticking to the topic of TakeOver, we have an email from Frank, a frequent caller here on Wrestling Night in America. He couldn't call in with his questions, but he did send me an email for us to discuss. It says, "Hey, Greg, hope all is well. I'm sure you're looking forward to the summer, as I have to think school is out at this point. School has been out for me for 3 weeks now. So, yes, I'm enjoying it so far." But he says, "I wanted to chew on a few things with TakeOver, as I know you and Kurt want to talk about that tonight. For starters, the Ricochet Velveteen match jumped out at me. You and Wade talked about it on the flagship, and I just wanted to discuss where you think both gentlemen may be headed. I would think Ricochet fits going after Adam Cole for the North American Championship. They've been kind of quiet with that title, unless I missed something, but nevertheless, maybe a match at Brooklyn. As far as Dream, it's kind of weird because he's pretty much getting a babyface reaction, so where do you go? The only thing I thought of was maybe getting him into a title match with Aleister Black at Brooklyn. They do have a history, as you know. I don't know where that leaves Lars Sullivan in EC3. Also, I know it is somewhat backwards to have Ricochet, who won, go after a lower-ranking title, and have Dream, who lost, go after their main title. Lots of moving parts, I know. So, Kurt, Ricochet and Velveteen Dream, we have NXT Brooklyn, the TakeOver coming up next in August before SummerSlam. So, do you see either Ricochet Dream fighting for the North American title or maybe the main title against Aleister Black? Where do you see things going forward for these two guys?
Oh, geez, that's tough. That's tough. Or option C, would they just have them fight each other again? you know, because I would almost think they would go that route. It's going to be another one of those Omega Okada classics. We're just going to have them keep fighting each other over and over again. But WWE being WWE, they're going to do it as soon as possible. So I would think they would just have them fight each other again. I don't even know if they'll even have a stipulation involved. They're just like, round two. Ding, ding. Here we go.
I wouldn't be against it.
Right. Yeah, I would not be against it either. As for what would happen with that North American Championship, that one, geez, that's beyond me what they're going to do with him. I mean, he's been involved in, a tag team feud. He is not a tag team champion. And so they're going to have to do something. Maybe EC3, is he a face or a heel? That's my question.
I thought he was a heel, but he's been showing, I mean, there's been face tendencies at times, but I think that character's got to be a heel.
I would think so, too. But maybe, I don't know, maybe they would send him after the North American title. That could be an option. Or they would just go ahead and...
I like the idea of Ricochet versus Adam Cole for the North American title. I think that's a feud that has a lot of promise. It's a step up for Ricochet as he climbs the ladder. I think it's, I wouldn't argue a Ricochet NXT title feud, but it does seem a little early for him to peak at that, so I would say Ricochet Cole fits for the North American Championship. Velveteen, I don't know. Aleister Black, Lars Sullivan, did that feel like a match to you? They would rematch at Brooklyn, or do you think Black goes on to something else now?
Yeah, Black would go on to something else. And Lars Sullivan, it felt like that was just a chapter to reinforce Aleister Black's reign as a champion. I don't think he's anything more than that. Just more like a side note, saying like, "Oh, he beat that monster. Let's move on to whatever he's got coming up next." That's what I feel. And I don't see Lars Sullivan bouncing back that high up from it, because if he's not going to get a rematch, then where does he go? So. Maybe it'll have him do a face turn, and maybe he'll go after the North American Championship. That's always possible.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is worth noting that on the Evolve show, Evolve 107 is going on as we record this, and Adam Cole is defending his North American Championship against Walter on that show tonight. It will not be shown streaming, obviously, with Adam Cole being under contract to NXT, but that is a match that will take place tonight. So... unlikely that a title changes hands, but worth noting as we go forward for NXT. I want to get to Frank's second NXT question. He said, Gargano Ciampa, I know we discussed this or someone else brought it up, but what about the winner gets a main roster contract and actually have Ciampa win? I say that because I don't think he needs a title on the NXT level, and how cool would it be to see him his wave goodbye at the top of the stage? Johnny can stay until WrestleMania next year and maybe get a run with the NXT title. I guess I'm also not in a hurry to see Johnny up here unless Daniel Bryan goes, which I don't see happening. That's the end of Frank's question. Daniel Bryan, of course, his contract is up September 1st. Brian and Gargano, people, including Frank, see them as similar wrestlers. I guess you could have Gargano on Raw and have Brian on SmackDown, so you have two similar wrestlers, but they're on different brands. Certainly, Kurt, we have not seen the end of Gargano versus Ciampa, even though some felt the end should have come probably at their pre-WrestleMania match. So they've already done the loser leaves town stip with Gargano and Ciampa. The big question that everybody's asking about NXT is, what's the stipulation going to be for TakeOver Brooklyn between these two?
The ultimate in escalation. It's going to be a shotgun on a pole match because it's going to be nothing short of a murder.
Wow. Well, Eddie Edwards did recently promise that on Impact, so this just kind of takes that to the next level.
where do you go? You know what? You know what they should do? A Hell in a Cell match for the first time on NXT. That's what I.
And I've seen that.
Do.
I've seen that suggested.
I think that's a great idea. First time ever. You know, where else can you go with the most epic of blood feuds of the year? You put them in that cell. That's what I think they should do.
It does feel like this feud has earned a first time ever in NXT type of match. Whatever that is, whether it's Hell in a Cell, whether it's another stipulation that's created for this match, I don't know. But
here's the hell of a stipulation.
The first ever NXT Hogpen match. I don't know. throwing that out there. It does feel, Kurt, like this would have been the prime opportunity for the Loser Leaves Town match, yet they've stretched it out. Some people think beyond its Best Buy date. Do you think this feud should have ended at WrestleMania, or do you think there's been enough good content to make it stretch as far as it has so far?
I have not seen anything diminish from this. Everything keeps getting better and better. I think it only needs one more match, though. I can't see it going past that. So to help out with that last match, to make it that epic, I think you bring in Vince Russo to do the booking for this one. You need a lot of rules involved.
You have to consider.
That's right. Bro, I got the idea for you, all right? Both guys don't start in the arena. No, they don't. Instead, they start off three blocks down the road, down in the subway. We're going to have a subway match, okay?
Oh, gosh. Vince Russo, I would look forward to that. He would know if there was anything he was good at, it was finding a conclusion to a long-running feud. You know, that's – oh, wait, no, that was what he was terrible at. What do you see after that? Let's talk about after that match that we assume is going to happen at NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. Who gets the call? Is it Ciampa? Is it Gargano? Is it both? Who gets the call up to the main roster?
Oh, it's got to be both. I mean, if you separate them right now, I think they get weaker apart. So you got to keep them together. I would have them both. I don't know, maybe I would have them both kind of debut at the Royal Rumble. And they just, like, maybe they come out as, like, numbers 5 and 7, we'll say. And the storyline for them in the Rumble is that they still can't keep their hands off each other. Like, they're actually outside the ring beating the holy crap out of each other for a good, like, 45 minutes. And they were so impressed that they like had to hire both of them and just put the feud up on the big screen. That's what I'm thinking.
So are you saying you would have them wrestle their last match at TakeOver Brooklyn? Would you hold them off TV, including NXT, until the Royal Rumble? Or would you have them continue doing something different in NXT and until the Royal Rumble and then call them up?
Yeah, maybe have them drift apart. You know, maybe one of them has a brief title feud with somebody. But they reignite the feud by having the other guy mess the other man's chances up avoiding said title. And then it leads into the Royal Rumble. That could be a way to do it, maybe. Oh, I love fantasy booking.
Just when you thought I was out, they pull me back in. the Gargano Ciampa booking. So, I mean, it could happen. Could happen. So, I mean, there's just so many ways to take it. It's been such a good feud, and we anticipate the end coming at NXT Brooklyn before SummerSlam. We're going to take another break. We'll be back with a final segment with Kurt Hoffman, where we get a final thought on NXT and then some recollections and remembrances of the man they called Vader. Right after this, you're listening to Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. You can find us on PWTorchLivecast.com every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central for this show. You can also find us on WWE pay-per-view nights, where we go on the air following WWE pay-per-views for taking your calls and talking about the show that has just concluded. So I guess you could look at it as three out of the four Sundays per month, we're on at 8 p.m. Eastern, and then we go on the air right after pay-per-views on nights that WWE has a major show. So that's our schedule here on Wrestling Night in America. You can also follow me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. I was on with Wade Keller on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast on Podcast One this past Friday for the Friday flagship, where we talked in depth about the Universal Championship and the WWE Championship and where we think the direction they are headed through Extreme Rules, SummerSlam, and into the fall, which also was the topic of my column on page 10 in the PW Torch newsletter this week. As always, you can find me on page 10 each and every week in the Torch newsletter. Right now, I'm on with Kurt Hoffman, the former producer of Gonzo and the Greg, for VIP members. That audio show is available in the archives if you care to take a listen back. And I'm sure there are episodes, Kurt, where you can find us down on a wrestler who later became a big star, or you know, we picked someone in NXT or in developmental who we thought we had an eye on, and they became a big star. So kind of interesting to go back and listen to those old shows for those reasons too. But beyond TakeOver, Kurt, I want to ask you about NXT in general and ask you if there's anyone in NXT that you see now that perhaps is not getting the TakeOver type exposure, that is sort of just working their way onto television, that you see could have a huge future in NXT or WWE?
Kind of like that that diamond in the rough, per se?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, geez. I'm trying to think. Everybody's been getting used pretty well. Except it was, I don't know, the Colton Kai, I think, could be used a little bit better than how she's being used right now. She's kind of this scared person trying to overcome her fears against somebody like Shayna Baszler. But I don't know, I could see a better upside for her potentially.
I think she's someone who they're just introducing to the audience. I think she's done a really good job in cowering to Shayna Baszler. There are people who look at that and see, well, they're burying Dakota Kai, and I don't see it that way. I think it's a means to an end for Shayna Baszler to show her intimidation over the women's locker room in NXT. And Dakota Kai has shown moments where she's overcome that, where she's overcome that fear. She's still winning matches. She had a good match with Bianca Belair on NXT TV this past week, and Bianca is certainly someone who, if you want to talk about a major future star in WWE, it's her. But certainly Dakota Kai is someone who she's not getting pushed right now. There are women ahead of her on the totem pole in NXT. But when she does get that opportunity, I think she will translate into becoming a big star. And that's sort of where my question was headed. So I think you nailed it with that one.
Yeah, yeah. And good call on Bianca Belair, by the way. She has a very, very bright future ahead of her. I mean, she's got a total package going on for her. It'd be impossible for her not to hit huge horizons, if you will. Another person I think they should give a run is Oney Lorcan. That guy is a freaking workhorse and a half, and he's pretty over with the crowd. Granted, you know, he's not the Rock on the mic, but I don't know. I would give him a shot.
I think he has. I think his look is sort of holding him back as far as his ceiling. If he ever got to WWE, I think that could be utilized better in NXT than it would be in WWE. I like him in this tag team with Danny Burch right now, and Oney, I think it's just come over that he's hurt. I don't know how long he's going to be out, but I like what they've done with him and Danny Burch in that tag team. That's a real old school, hard hitting tag team that I've enjoyed.
Yes, very awesome pairing. So you said Oney Lorcan's going to be out for, have they determined the time yet?
I just saw it like before I went on the air that he's hurt, and I don't know how seriously or how long he's going to be out.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, depending upon how long he's out for, maybe I would just give that tag team a break for a little while, and then I would bring him back on with, like, title run style. Like, they'll just run the table. Because, I wouldn't just have it be a short-lived thing. Yeah, I would definitely go full force.
I want to talk finally about Vader, who passed away on Monday at the age of 63. He'd been having heart issues for the last couple of years. Unfortunately, never made it into the WWE Hall of Fame while he was alive. And I know that was something that was very important to him. But for me, Vader was a guy who, you know, I grew up in the early 90s on WWF, and that's basically all I watched. The few times that I did watch WCW before I got into it heavily in the Monday Nitro era, there were two guys who always stood out to me whenever I'd flip over to WCW programming. One of them was Sting, because having grown up on WWF programming, he reminded me of the Ultimate Warrior, the face paint, the muscles, the, you know, larger than life sort of persona. So Sting was a guy who stood out to me. The other guy who stood out to me was Vader. He was a big man. WWF was a big man territory, with Hogan dispatching of guys like Earthquake and King Kong Bundy and Andre the Giant. And here was Vader in WCW, but he wasn't just a big man. He was agile. He was hard-hitting. And he had the weird mask that I looked like a jockstrap, kind of. So, you know, he stood out to me from very early on. And then to sort of follow him to the WWF, and I was very excited when he came. And after a pretty hot start, unfortunately, backstage forces, injuries, age catching up with him, I think at the time, all conspired to make his WWF run less than stellar. And I think he also came in at a time where WWF was transitioning to the Attitude Era. They were transitioning out of the new generation, so to speak. So I think he kind of got lost in the shuffle there. Really unfortunate, because I think he could have been a major player. But, you know, that's kind of my impressions of Vader. Kurt, what are your thoughts on the man they call Vader?
I remember the first time I got a glimpse at the man, the myth, the legend known as Vader. I was at my grandpa's house as a kid, being babysat or whatnot. And I was on the kitchen counter, I don't know, maybe playing with action figures per se, I don't know. I see across the room on the living room TV, and my grandpa must have fallen asleep, because he, you know, he didn't really care about wrestling at all, so he must have left the channel on and fell asleep, per usual. And I noticed wrestling was on. Cool. So I'm watching from the kitchen, and I see this monster with this metal ram's head helmet come crushing his way down to the ring with smoke blowing out, and already I'm hooked. I'm like, what is that? Not who is that, what is that? And I see this man with this interesting jockstrap-like mask destroy two jobbers in the ring at the same time. And from then on, I just was flabbergasted at such a human being. Vader was like probably one of my all-time favorite heels, not just in WCW, but maybe in the early 90s. It's a shame that his run in the WWF wasn't as good as I hoped it was going to be. But you're right, you know, he got lost in the shuffle with what they were doing. But, I mean, he definitely has a lasting impression for what it comes to big, intimidating monsters. And not to mention, he's had, like, the greatest slew of managers that any wrestler has had, from Harley Race to Jim Cornette. A great career. And I need to go back on that New Japan World app, and I need to look up some Vader matches on that. Because as everybody has said, from what I've heard, you know, all this best stuff was in Japan. And I never really seen much of that. So I think I owe it to myself to want to go back and see, I guess, the prime that was Vader.
Mm-hmm.
But besides that, what I have seen, just the best.
Yeah, I agree. I've been meaning since last Monday to go on New Japan World and look up some of those matches. People have been tweeting them out all week. People that I follow have been tweeting out the matches that you need to go back and watch on New Japan World. So I'm very excited to be able to do that here in the next few days, and looking forward to that. So, Kurt, always a pleasure to talk to you. Always a pleasure to talk wrestling, and we'll have to do this again sometime.
Yes, my old friend, I will be more than glad to come back whenever you call off for me. Hopefully, the next time I come on, I'll have Gonzo's answer pertaining to the alleged $100 that he owes you. So stick around, folks. The plot thickens.
Good luck with that. I know he's on Twitter, but I haven't seen him tweet lately. And I would tell people to go and tweet at Gonzo, hashtag pay Greg $100. But I'm not that petty, so I won't ask you. I won't ask people to do that. I did notice, Kurt, that when I texted you about this, about joining me, you told me that you were going to be all in for this, with capital letters on all in. So I ask you, are you all in for Chicago? Is that what you were trying to tell me? Was that a message to me? Am I going to see you popping up on Twitter? Is Cody going to send out a tweet with all in with Kurt Hoffman on there too?
I got nothing to say right now. I mean, I know so far they've only
announced... I know what that means.
I know they've only announced one commentator for the event coming up in Chicago. But there might be two.
I tell you what, Kurt Hoffman and Don Callis, I would pay money to watch that commentary team. Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, we'll see what really happens then.
All right, well, folks, you heard it. Keep an eye out for Kurt Hoffman at All In now in September. But Kurt, again, thank you for joining me, and we'll definitely have you on again soon.
No problem, Greg. As always, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you. That was longtime Gonzo and the Greg producer Kurt Hoffman joining me here for Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. 515-605-9345 is the number to call in. We're going to go to our phones after this. We'll also talk Raw and SmackDown and start a preview of Extreme Rules and tell you what's on deck for that pay-per-view coming in July. Lucha Underground and Impact Wrestling as well. Don't go anywhere. This is Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes. Places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week, if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
Wrestling Night in America returns here on PWTorchLivecast.com. We go to the phones, and Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, what have you got for us tonight?
The first question for you is on Vader. You ever get a chance to see him on any house shows, either with WCW or WWF? Because I'm sort of curious how the quality of his matches were, if they were as good as what they were on television when you went to a house show to see him wrestle.
I did not ever see Vader on house shows. My house show experience was it was kind of in bits and pieces. I went to couple house shows in the early 90s, WWF. I've only ever been to one WCW live show, and that was a Monday Nitro taping back in, I think, 2000, in April of 2000, when they were in Rochester, New York. So that was obviously Vader wasn't there at that time, and I don't think I ever saw him. I don't think I ever saw him live. I know I went to a WWF pay-per-view, an In Your House Revenge of Taker, in April of 97, I want to say. And I don't think he was on that show. But as for house shows, I'd never seen him at a house show, so I can't say.
Okay. Yeah. Second question for you is on Nakamura. Do you see him possibly winning the U.S. title so he can rename it the Japanese title, since he's been doing a gimmick where he's been speaking Japanese and getting under everyone's skin pretending he can't speak English? Sort of like what Lance Storm did in WCW, where he renamed the championship the Canadian title.
I would be surprised if that happened. I don't think that – I think that Nakamura could certainly win the U.S. title. And I think that would be a nice consolation prize after challenging for the WWE title so many times and not winning it. I think him winning the U.S. title would be a nice recovery project, I guess. I don't see him changing the name of the title. I get where you're coming from, Ryan, about that fitting in with his gimmick, but I think that would be a little too gimmicky with WWE. As of late, they've treated their titles with a little more reverence and a little more respect than we've seen them treat the titles in different eras. So I think changing the name of the title or anything like that, I think that would go a little beyond how WWE wants the titles to be seen.
Okay. Third question is on the Money in the Bank. I was talking to a local bartender. He says that they're unable to get the WWE network because he says that it's illegal for restaurants to get the network. And he says anyone that does that, because I know like there's like a lot of other bars within a couple hours at Cumberland to get the network, but he claims that they do that illegally. So you know he's telling the truth on this?
I don't know. It would surprise me if it was illegal to do that. Maybe if you're paying a regular user price and not a I know for pay-per-views, if you buy the pay-per-view, I think it's a lot more expensive for the bar to buy it than if you were to buy it at home. And I'm wondering if there's a similar upcharge with the network where you could buy it to show pay-per-view to the bar, but you would have to buy it at a higher price than if you or I were to buy it to watch at home. So maybe he's talking it's illegal to buy it at the normal price and play it, whereas it would be legal. Maybe the other bars are buying it at the higher price and playing it. I don't know. If you were at a bar and you were showing WWE pay-per-views, I would think that you would do it through your cable or satellite provider rather than through the network. The only reason you would do it through the network is it would be cheaper. And I don't know the legality of it, but that's something that I'm kind of interested in looking into now that you bring it up.
Okay. My final question for you is on the Jericho Cruise. Do you think it's going to be dangerous for them wrestling on a ship, being in a wrestling ring while the ship's moving? Or do you see any injuries
Hopefully they don't get into any, dangerous waters. I think that, they'll probably – it's probably a big enough ship to where the small waves or even medium-sized waves won't affect it all that much. And I'm sure this is something that the wrestlers have been assured of and that Jericho has kind of looked into. I don't think he would throw those guys out there if there was any significant chance of injury because of being on the ocean or whatever like that. So I think that kind of stuff all gets taken care of in the evidentiary phase when you look into doing this. So I think the odds of that happening are pretty low.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, Ryan. Good to talk to you. That was Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. 515-605-9345 is the number to call if you'd like to talk about any of the major events in pro wrestling, such as Extreme Rules, which comes up next month, and the table is starting to be set for that on Raw and SmackDown. This past week on Raw, Dolph Ziggler won the Intercontinental title, and we saw the Sasha Banks-Bailey relationship come to blows again. Lashley and Bobby Lashley and Roman Reigns were announced for the Extreme Rules number one contender match for the Universal title. Presumably, although I don't think it was officially announced, that will take place at SummerSlam against Brock Lesnar. This week we have Dolph Ziggler against Rollins in a rematch. Seth Rollins has invoked his rematch clause for this Monday. We look at what's next for Nia Jax and Alexa Bliss. I believe that match will also take place at Extreme Rules, where Nia gets her rematch. Ronda Rousey, we know, has been suspended for 30 days for her attack this past week on Raw. And this leads me into the third question that Frank had in his email after his two NXT questions. Frank asks, as I get it up here on the computer, finally, multi-man Raw match. I'm of the mindset that until further notice, Roman is going to be the guy to win that and go on to face Lesnar at SummerSlam. Now, I don't see that staying a one-on-one, but not for the booing, but for Brock. I get the sense Brock doesn't want a job, and that's why we need a third and maybe a fourth participant to get the title off of him. I have no evidence, no proof, but if Vince wanted the title on Roman, he could have done it either at Mania or Greatest Royal Rumble. Why hold off? I know I've gone through theories, but if Roman wins the Universal belt and it pins someone else, I can't help but wonder if Brock was the issue. The multi-man match at SummerSlam, I think that would save the match from a live crowd point of view, because the match being in Brooklyn, it's going to get a negative reception because of Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, if Reigns wins at Extreme Rules, which I think a lot of people are assuming that's the direction WWE is going. That match is not going to be greeted very well by the live crowd, and I think WWE even knows that. So positing the solution that we put another person or two in the match to keep the crowd engaged in a positive manner. I just wonder how you get to that point, because the multi-man match Extreme Rules to find the number one contender, that match would have to end in some sort of schmoz. It would have to end in maybe a double pin where Reigns pins one guy and the other guy pins another guy at the same time. The problem is that five-way at Extreme Rules is, by definition, a no disqualification match. Now, if you had Roman Reigns one-on-one with somebody for the number one contendership and Reigns wins via nefarious means, that opponent could argue, hey, I'm deserving too. I had him beat before this interference, da-da-da-da-da. With the no DQ stip in place, I think it would be harder to make that argument. Not impossible, but it would be harder to make that argument. So it's not out of the realm of possibility, but remember, WWE, if they want to crown Roman Reigns as their big babyface star or their big star, it would be best and most effective to do that in a one-on-one match. When you involve other people, it complicates things. It makes Reigns' win, even though he's beating three guys instead of one, it makes that win less impressive than if he beat Brock Lesnar one-on-one. Brock Lesnar, who has just been dominant as champion. He set the record for days as champion on Raw. So I think that's one of the problems with the multi-man matches. You want Reigns to go over Lesnar clean one-on-one, because it makes Reigns seem like a bigger deal doing that. Certainly, again, not going to rule out the possibility of others getting involved, but I think it's harder with a five-way at Extreme Rules to make that happen. You know, Stephanie McMahon could always step in and say, okay, a heel deserves an opportunity to make SummerSlam a three with Reigns and Lesnar and, I don't know, Kevin Owens, since she's worked her magic for him in the past. That could be an option. SmackDown last week had the debut of Sanity as they attacked the Usos before their scheduled match. The Bludgeon Brothers, in a rematch from the Money in the Bank pre-show, defended their title successfully over Gallows and Anderson to keep the tag team titles. And we had Rusev winning a gauntlet match to face AJ Styles at Extreme Rules. Definite dark horse in that match was Rusev. And again, this was something that Wade Keller and I talked about on the Friday flagship on his Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. If you haven't listened to that, I implore you to check it out on Podcast One. Rusev feels like a one and done as far as one match Extreme Rules and then AJ Styles moves on to something for SummerSlam. I am a proponent of AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe at SummerSlam. I'm a proponent of that match on a big stage. If they don't do it at SummerSlam, you look at the Royal Rumble, you look at WrestleMania next year. Now, I think that match is deserving of build-up to make it come off as the big match that it could. So that's something that's coming down the pike. You look at Daniel Bryan and The Miz, which things were set up in that direction during this gauntlet match. Do they do that at Extreme Rules? Do they do it at SummerSlam? Now, Daniel Bryan was attacked by the Bludgeon Brothers. Does he recruit Kane to help him fend off the Bludgeon Brothers at Extreme Rules and then move on to The Miz at SummerSlam? Again, Miz versus Bryan is a match that has to be done on a big stage. SummerSlam would fit that. But doing Bryan and Kane or Bryan and whomever against the Bludgeon Brothers at Extreme Rules, A, would you put the tag team titles on the line? I don't see why you wouldn't. B, would you have Bryan and Kane or Bryan and whomever lose to the Bludgeon Brothers? Because if you're going to do Bryan versus The Miz at SummerSlam, you probably don't want Bryan and Kane coming out of Extreme Rules as tag team champions, unless you have them drop it on SmackDown, but it doesn't help Bryan. He's not on an upswing to face The Miz at SummerSlam. So, you know, you could do Bludgeon Brothers versus Bryan and Kane or Bryan whomever in a non-title match. You know, maybe that makes the most sense, but you'd have to have a reason for doing it in a non-title situation, I think. So that's, you know, a lot of moving parts in that final match, the main event of SmackDown this past week. Really intriguing stuff. You know, we'll have to see how they build Rusev. I think looking at how they build him, do they build him as a babyface or do they build him as a heel? He came off as babyface-ish in the post-match. So you'll have Rusev versus AJ Styles, babyface versus babyface, which is what they did with Shinsuke Nakamura at WrestleMania. You could have Rusev turn heel prior to Extreme Rules, which would be a situation, again, very similar to Shinsuke Nakamura, where he turned heel during his feud with AJ Styles, which is what Rusev would be doing. Do you do a babyface Rusev versus babyface AJ Styles? I don't think that's the worst idea in the world. Hopefully, what this does is this helps Rusev, even if he does not win the WWE title at Extreme Rules. Hopefully he can leave that match and leave that event with momentum. And even if he's not a long-term opponent of AJ Styles, he can use that goodwill and that momentum built up in this match and in the build-up to this match after the match. And he can be a more important player on SmackDown than he has been, because he hasn't really been a big deal on SmackDown as much as the fans have willed him to that point. So it's really going to be interesting to see the buildup on SmackDown and how things go. This does feel a bit like a bone thrown to the fans of Rusev, but you know, we'll see. what's the stipulation going to be? I think Extreme Rules, you're going to have it's not a good pay-per-view for the first match of a feud or the only match of a feud, because Extreme Rules is the big matches have the stipulations, the hardcore, the extreme stipulations, and AJ Styles and Rusev shouldn't have a stipulation attached to it. I'm sure they will inorganically find a way to use a stipulation in the buildup. But I disagree with the idea that this should have a stipulation. And this is what you run into when you do these themed pay-per-views and have to build silly stipulations around matches that don't call for them at the time. We're going to take our final break and come back with a discussion of Impact, Lucha Underground, and some independent notes from the last few days right here on PWTorchLivecast.com.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at PWPodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling-related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's PWPodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality-hosted podcasts.
Greg Parks, PW Torch columnist, here with you on PWTorchLivecast.com, Wrestling Night in America. And yes, you can go to PWPodcast.com for podcast recaps, but you can also now listen to the Pro Wrestling Podcast, a VIP audio show offered on PWTorch.com with Andrew Socek and Jeff Rush, who break down some of the personality-hosted podcasts around the horn. And that is now available. Their first episode posted June 18th is available for your listening pleasure on the VIP side of PWTorch.com. Lucha Underground returned 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, I guess. And again, that was one of the shows that unfortunately we didn't get a chance to talk to last week due to the Money in the Bank pay-per-view taking up all of our time. We did have in the first episode some major happenings. Tony Cueto, the father of Dario Cueto, took over after Dario's death. It was the first episode outside of the normal temple that has been used for the first three seasons. Antonio Cueto, by the way, I hope I'm not spoiling anything, is the character, the person who played Dario Cueto, playing also his father, which is something to behold. Pentagon Dark retained the Lucha Underground Championship in Aztec Warfare on that first episode. Aztec Warfare, of course, their version of the Royal Rumble. Last week, Jack Swagger debuted in Lucha Underground, because when I think of Lucha Underground, I think of Jack Swagger. He debuted as Jake Strong. He was on the losing end of a Trios championship match. The Trios titles were retained by Killshot, the Mac, and Son of Havoc, and Jake Strong attacked and beat up his tag team partners after the match. Pentagon Dark also defeated Matanza Cueto in the main event to retain his Lucha Underground title, and some character work from Matanza Cueto, who lost, and I believe they said this was his first loss, and first loss, perhaps one-on-one. I think he was champion, so he must have lost the title at some other point. It all starts to run together, but this was a major loss. The announcers were playing up as a major loss, whatever the circumstances, and Matanza cowering to his father, to the match. Antonio Cueto coming out and offering some harsh discipline to Matanza. And we'd never seen Matanza Cueto react quite in that way, in that manner, when his brother Dario was running the show. So an interesting twist on the Matanza Cueto character, certainly something to be looking out for as the show continues. We move on to Impact Wrestling, which has a pay-per-view also coming up in January, that being Slammiversary. This past week, LAX defeated Z&E for the tag titles. So new Impact Wrestling tag champions, LAX. We had Conan making his return and making his return in a big way in a pre-recorded segment where he confronted Kingston, who had sort of taken over his role as the leader of LAX in Conan's absence. So now it looks like a territorial battle between Conan and Eddie Kingston to take place here over LAX. Scott Steiner defeated KM, who wanted to face Fala Ba after their relationship had broken up. However, Fala comes out to deliver the news that Scott Steiner would instead face KM Steiner, picking up the victory. Madison Rain over Taya Valkyrie, which was, I would consider it in some ways an upset, but Madison Rain did note after the match that she would be facing Sue Young for the Knockouts Championship at Slammiversary. So Madison Rain, in her latest comeback bid, will challenge Sue Young for the title at Slammiversary. Killer Cross cut a backstage promo. It was revealed at the very end of the previous week's episode that he was responsible for the taking out of Impact personnel backstage and leaving the red X on them. It was revealed that it was Killer Cross. So we can expect some in-ring shenanigans or perhaps an in-ring debut in the coming weeks from him. In the main event, we had Pentagon and Phantasma over OVE. Sami Callihan went on the attack after the match, so it looks like there's a situation now with Pentagon and Phantasma versus OVE and Sami Callihan. You may be asking, I thought Sami Callihan had a deal with Eddie Edwards. Edwards, on this show, found his wife at their house, which turned out to be empty. And I think the idea is that he is upset at Tommy Dreamer for the role Dreamer has played in Edwards' feud with Sami Callihan, and perhaps he believes that Dreamer is horning in on his relationship with his wife, Alicia. So it looks like the Edwards-Sami feud has detoured now to Edwards-Tommy Dreamer, to the extent that it's being advertised for next week on Impact that Eddie Edwards will be visiting House of Hardcore, the promotion run by Tommy Dreamer. So likely a confrontation of some sort between Edwards and Dreamer there. The Desi Hit Squad is in action this coming week on Impact Wrestling. We also have Moose talking about his world title opportunity at Slammiversary against the champion Austin Aries. Also this coming week, Rich Swann makes his Impact debut, and Matt Sydal versus Desmond Xavier. July 22nd, 2018 is the date for Slammiversary 16, taking place at the Rebel Complex in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Austin Aries will defend his Impact World Championship against Moose. Sue Young defends her Knockouts Championship against Madison Rain. We know Johnny Impact will be returning to Impact Wrestling at Slammiversary. So those are some of the matches that have been announced thus far for that show. As for the independent scene, I mentioned earlier in the show that Adam Cole will be defending his NXT North American Championship against Walter at Evolve 107, which is taking place right now. A couple of PW Torch correspondents are corresponding via Twitter from that show. You can follow PW Torch columnist Sean Rackin on Twitter at @SR_Torch. He is tweeting the show, as well as Mike McMahon, PW Torch contributor in Impact Wrestling. He does the Impact Wrestling coverage every Thursday night, as well as the live cast afterward, at Mike McMahon PW. He is also at the show tweeting about it. So if you're listening to me live and you're wondering about what's going on in that show, those are the guys you can follow. As that show goes on, I'm on Twitter right now, and I see WWE sent out a tweet earlier in the day wishing happy birthday to Zeus, Tiny Lister. It's his birthday today, I guess. So random, but there you have it. Evolve 106 ran last night, and in the main event, Matt Riddle went to a no contest with Shane Strickland in the main event, and we have a new WWN champion. It was Joey Janela who defeated Austin Theory for the WWN title at Evolve 106 last night. So that is the Evolve results. We also have New Japan. They ran a show, Kizuna Road. And if I can read my writing, Makabe, Hanma, Tanahashi, Taguchi, and Henare over LIJ was the main event of that show yesterday. And on a Stardom show, in the Wonder of Stardom title match, Momo Watanabe defeated Deonna Purrazzo, who will be heading to NXT soon. I think that's all but confirmed. So she is Purrazzo is coming to NXT, adding to the women's wrestling talent in NXT. That's all I've got for tonight on Wrestling Night in America. Thank you so much for tuning in, as always, whether you're listening live or you're listening on demand on PWTorchLivecast.com. Don't forget, we go on the air every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, unless there's a WWE pay-per-view. We'll go on right afterward. Our next signpost up ahead is next month in July for Extreme Rules 2018, which will take place on July 15th at the PPG Paints Arena in Pittsburgh. So make sure you set your alarm and join us for that after the Extreme Rules pay-per-view, where we will be talking all about that. And we'll be back next week with a new guest co-host talking all the big events in pro wrestling. I'm Greg Parks, and thanks for listening. And if you are not a VIP member of PWTorch.com, I cannot stress enough how much content, written and audio, that you are missing out on. If you love the live cast, you will enjoy everything offered on the VIP side. So I wholeheartedly hope that you will sign up for a VIP membership, pwtorch.com/govip. And if you need more details, here they are.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including the review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.